Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the professionals when we come back. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow three basic rules. It's called location, location, and location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we're talking to the police or to government agents, and that is, don't say anything, then keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it and what not to say and who not to say it to is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is that all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make these kinds of short, terse statements like these. Listen up. The first judge says, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? And he said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. Quite a statement. If I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester. Listen to the second judge. He said, you can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. That comes from Belknap versus United States. And if I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now listen to this third judge. Here's what he had to say. He said the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and farsighted. And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like to have some more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. And best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc. That's our school. And it's called courtroom strategy and procedure. It's available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we were talking about this thing of the professionals last time. I kind of castigated the professionals. Now, why are we in the process of castigating professionals? It's because the professionals are in control of the world. Boys and girls, all of the leaders of the world are college-trained people. Name one that isn't. Send me an email. Tell me the president of Rwanda or East Botswana land or someplace. Never went to college. Let me know of one or two, would you? Heck, there are out of 200 countries in the world, there might actually be a couple. But as far as I can tell, all the major nations in the world and most of the unmajor nations of the world are being led by college people. And I would say that the world is in pretty poor condition from all of these college people who we lay people down here at the bottom, all of us blue-collar guys, all of us high school dropouts, you know, and high school people, we look up to. We're taught and trained, you know, from the time we're little kids that, hey, listen, you follow the advice of your lawyer. You follow the instructions of your doctor. I remember my grandmother said, my doctor ordered me. Huh? Well, how does that work? You walk into your doctor's office, and your doctor orders you, and you salute smartly and say, yes, sir, and then you go out and take these pills. Is that the way that works? It sure worked that way with my granny. Boy, she thought her doctor now was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. And when her doctor spoke, she jumped right to attention. Now, while we're talking about doctors over here, let me bring to your attention this thing called autism. Autism. It now affects about one out of every 168 children in America. Or maybe it's one out of 168 of the general population, of which, you know, about, probably a third of the people in the country. 100 million are probably children, you know, under the age of 18. And there's a number of them. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's many thousands now of these children have autism. Now, for a plumber like me or a carpenter or a general contractor, we don't know what causes autism. We don't have a clue. But I can testify, I can tell you that I never heard the name autism when I was a kid. Never heard it. Don't know what it is. Sudden infant death syndrome, they call that SIDS. I never heard of that when I was a kid. Doesn't mean that there weren't any cases of it. There might have been a few, but there weren't very many. But then this thing of autism got to be pretty hot and heavy here in the last 20 years or so. So bad, in fact, that out in California, the legislature out in California, to their credit, I'd say, they said, hey, listen, we don't want any more of that thimerosal in our vaccines out here, at least in California. So they took it out. And the incidence of autism out there has plunged. I think the last time I saw a number, it had been cut in half. That's all they did. Now, they're still shooting the kids up with vaccines. I mean, those children in California are getting the same 35 vaccines that your kids are getting, but they're getting them without the thimerosal. Because somebody, I don't know who it was, but somebody came up with the idea that they thought that mercury was probably bad for you. I don't know if that was some government agency there, you know, came up with the idea that mercury was bad for you, and they came up with some minimum amounts, and that these vaccines contain more than those minimum amounts, and then you give these kids 35 shots, and they have these minimum amounts in it, and 35 times one minimum amount, and it adds up to a lot of mercury in your system, and that's more than you ought to be subjected to. And so for us lay people out here, you know, we read the papers, you know, we read Reader's Digest and U.S. News and World Report, and we look at that, and we say, oh, that doesn't sound very intelligent to us. Now, the doctors are all split on this subject over here, and the pharmaceutical companies, and they write pieces, and we see them in Reader's Digest, and they deny it, absolutely deny that the thimerosal in the vaccines is causing autism. Hell, I don't know. I'm a crummy plumber. The hell do I know about it? But, boys, I'm not brain dead yet. So I was kind of interested when I heard that the Californians out there were going to try a wild new experiment. They were going to ban it from their vaccines, and we noticed that the incidence of autism in California drops in half. Now, what does that tell you? I mean, those of us that have never been to college and can't add and subtract and we ain't too smart, you know, tells us that we like that California plan a hell of a lot better than the Missouri plan. And we don't even have to go to college to figure that out. It's what my old granddaddy called common sense. Now, of course, some college guy, you know, has got a degree after his name comes back and says, yeah, but you know, that's just anecdotal evidence. Let me give you one here on SIDS. The Japanese, you know, they, a few years back, you know, they got to looking at that SIDS thing, that sudden infant death syndrome, and they thought, well, gee, I wonder if the vaccines that were given to children might have something to do with that. And so they normally start children, you know, babies on their vaccine regimen here at about age 2 months. They like to get right after it, you know. So they start them at about 2 months, and then they notice that there's a bunch of kids, you know, that just go to sleep one night and don't wake up in the morning. And so the Japanese, they thought, well, let's postpone this this vaccine regimen from 2 months to 2 years. And so they started inoculating the children at age 2 years instead of 2 months, and their incidence of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, it dropped in half. Dropped in half. Well, let me ask you this, kids. Do you suppose that you people out in California, if you postponed the vaccine regimen from 2 months to 2 years, that maybe the incidence of sudden infant death syndrome might drop in half in California like it did in Japan? Would that be a good thing or a bad thing? You know, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just a reporter here just giving you some facts. The Japanese thought that that was a better program. So then they inoculate their children at age 2 years, you know, two, three, four, five, and so they just have half as many sudden infant death syndrome deaths. Now, let me just add a thought here. What do you think might happen in Japan if they didn't vaccinate those children at all? Never gave a single kid in Japan a single shot. Do you suppose that maybe the incidence of sudden infant death syndrome might drop the other half? Just a thought. Just thought, you know, I'd throw that one out for you. And then maybe the rest of you, you know, might want to consider that. Now, I'm just a layperson down here, so I look at these numbers years ago. In fact, I gotta tell a little story here. I had a little boy, Ted, my firstborn. He pretty good little kid, you know, and so I sent him off to a private school. He's about 5 years old, maybe six. Sent him off to this private school. Now, my kid never had a shot. I mean, this kid's 6 years old. He's never had a single snake venom monkey pus shot and introduced into his little body. And now he's going to this private school. See, and one day the school nurse, she sent me a note home. My little boy comes in and he hands me the note. And I read the note and it says, next Wednesday we're going to have vaccination day. It's kind of like Flag Day. You know, next week we're going to decorate with flags. You know, well, next week we're all going to have vaccinations. So it said, sign here. They wanted me to sign this piece of paper and give it to your little boy and send him back to school. And then next Wednesday we'll shoot him up with some snake venom and monkey pus and make him safe for public school. So I sat down and wrote a little letter. And in the letter, I said, I don't want you to give my boy any vaccinations. No vaccines, no shots. Don't make a mistake. Don't screw up. Don't have an accident. Because if you have an accident, shoot my kid up with these vaccines over here, you may rest assured that litigation will surely follow. In layman's language, I'm going to sue you, but I didn't threaten her that way. I just said, you can rest assured that there will be litigation if you shoot my kid up. And then I put a little clause in there, and I said, now, if you can't handle this, if next Wednesday you're going to shoot up 40 kids and you can't just hold it down to 39 and leave my kid out, I'll keep my kid home on that day to make sure that there's no accidents and that nobody makes a mistake with the Gordon kid. And so I sent that letter with the consent form back to school. You know, and that day the school nurse called me on the telephone. She wanted to share with me some facts that I might not be aware of. And that was good of her. And so I listened. She preached me a sermon for about 5 minutes. And I'm sure that school nurse had been to college. I'm sure she had a degree after her name, and she was a registered nurse, and I'm sure that she was just as sincere as nurses can be. And I'm all in favor of free speech. So if you nurses out there, you know, listening to me right now, are in favor of vaccines and vaccination, my God, go out there and shoot them up. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I don't want to stop you people from using vaccines. I just want to stop you from using the vaccines on me. And I know I'm terribly uninformed, and I know that I'm terribly ignorant, and I don't know my hind end from a hot rock, but, you know, I believe in free speech, and I believe in research, and I like to look things up, and I spent a lot of time looking at this vaccine thing. Read, you know, two or three books, not exactly an authority on the subject, but, you know, I'm fair to middle and well-informed, you know, best as I can do for an old country boy. And my conclusion is that vaccine probably not too good for you, especially when it comes to autism and SIDS. And my conclusion was probably bad for me. Anyway, this nurse, she preached me a sermon for about 15 minutes on the phone, and I went, And then after about 15 minutes, you know, she said, well, now what do you think? And I said, now, okay, now thank you very much for calling me, and thank you very much for sharing with me your views. Now, let me reiterate. If there's going to be a problem next Wednesday, I will keep my kid home so that you don't accidentally shoot him up, because if you do, now, there's going to be hell to pay. There's going to be litigation. There's just going to be fur flying every place. And she was just shocked. I'm sure that she'd never heard of a fool like me before. And so she practically said, you know, you must hate your child to withhold from him these life-saving benefits of vaccinations. And she'd already explained to me how the human race had been saved from extinction through vaccines and vaccinations. So I said to her, well, excuse me, maybe I've missed something here. Let me ask you this. Is there anybody else in that class or in that school that's not going to be vaccinated next Wednesday? She said, no, they're all going to be vaccinated. Your little boy Ted is the only one that's going to be accepted. I said, okay. Now, that being the case, when you give these vaccines to these other 39 children over here, that's going to protect them so that if little Teddy were to come to school with one of these horrible diseases that your vaccine is supposed to protect him, my little boy Ted could not give those other 39 children his disease because they're protected. Isn't that what I understood from you? And she said, yes, that's true. I said, okay. Let me ask you this. I said, now those children are all going to be protected from these horrible diseases. And so they couldn't possibly give that disease to my boy Ted because they're all protected from it, aren't they? And she said, yes, that's true. Yes, they're all protected, and they could not give that disease to anybody else because they've been vaccinated. I said, okay, now if I understand this then, my boy Ted's going to be the only kid in that school that isn't shot up, and he can't give anybody else the disease because they've all been immunized and protected, and they cannot give him the disease because they've all been immunized and protected. So it looks like we've accomplished our goal. Everybody is going to be protected from disease. And there was a long pregnant pause in the conversation right there at that point. Being an old-timey salesman, that being my closing question, I shut up. And I didn't say anything more, and there was this long pregnant pause, and she spoke first, and she lost. And she started to tell me about how good these vaccines were. And I said, lady, I've already heard the sermon. Don't need to give it to me again. Let me reiterate, if there's going to be a mistake, she said, there won't be any mistake. Your little boy Ted will not be vaccinated next Wednesday. I said, thank you. That's what I wanted to hear. All right, well, thank you. And I bid her a good day, and then we hung up, and my little boy Ted went to school. He didn't get shot up with vaccines. In fact, my kid never got shot up with vaccines until he went into the Army. But by then, you know, he was an adult, and he was able to make his own decisions in life. By the way, if you want to go into the Army without vaccines, they got a program for people like you, just in case you didn't know that. Now, the reason I bring that little story up is because the people that are promoting these vaccines, these people are all scientific people. These people are doctors and nurses, and they're druggists and pharmacists. These are the people that give us autism and SIDS. They don't know what causes it. They don't know how to cure it. And then they go right on to tell you that there's absolutely no problem with the vaccines. Now, excuse me, if you don't know what causes this, how in the hell can you tell me that the vaccine is safe? And out of one side of your mouth, you say, I don't know. And out of the other side of your mouth, you say, well, yep, we're absolutely certain that. The Bible has something to say about you paid professionals out there. In the first book that the Apostle Paul wrote, in Romans chapter 1. And here again, I don't want to pick on all you professionals out there per se, but, you know, when you got it coming, you know, let's get after it. If you got it coming, let's get after it. Now, if you know something, I want to listen. But, you know, if you're just spouting off over here because this is the way you make your living, you know, well, then I want to consider what you have to say with a grain of salt and let it fall on the ground. Now, I haven't heard anybody intelligent come up to me and explain to me why it is that these vaccines are 100% safe. In fact, even the vaccine manufacturers admit that 100 children a year are killed from the vaccines and the reactions that come from it, which isn't very many. Honest to God, you know, you're going to vaccinate 50 million children in this country and only 100 of them are going to die. And I'm sitting here saying, well, that's not very many. But if you didn't vaccinate any children at all, there wouldn't be any vaccine deaths or vaccine reactions at all. And then they come back and say, yeah, but then there would be several thousand people that die from these diseases. I'm sitting here saying, well, that's probably true. And so you people have a choice to make, and I want you to get out there and make that choice. But I want to tell you that there's two ways for knowledge to come into your brain. Only two. Two ways for you to learn something. One is by revelation. That is, somebody can come up to you and they can tell you that from their experience or from their personal knowledge, from information that you can't get any other way than for me to tell you. That's called revelation. My daddy used to give me revelations all the time. He'd come up to me and he would report on certain facts and events, and then he would reveal that to me. And then there's the second way, is by experimentation. And my daddy explained the difference between revelation and experimentation. He said, there is no better teacher than experience. That was my wise old daddy. Told me that when I was a little kid, about 12 years old. He said, son, there just is no better teacher than experience. You can't find a better teacher. But he went on to say, it's a god-awful hard way to learn. And if the only way you can learn, son, is by experience, then get after it. But son, if there's any other way that you can learn from the mistakes and the experiences of others, for God's sake, avail yourself of that benefit. Well, that was my daddy. Now, I knew my daddy didn't know his hind end from a hot rock, and he didn't know what he was talking about, so I got out there and I started experimenting. I wanted to use the scientific method. I wanted to be a scientist, and I wanted to get out and experiment and test and try it out and make sure that it was true, accurate, and correct, and I knew it from my own experience. Of course, I never did test the law of gravity by jumping off of the Empire State Building. I was content to let somebody else test that. And I was content to let somebody else test 3 grams of arsenic. I never ate 3 grams of arsenic, but I read of a guy that did. And survived it by taking charcoal. He was testing charcoal. That was an experiment. Now, what I like to do is I like to watch you, and then when I see that you have a good experience, then I like to emulate you, and when I see you had a bad experience, then I like to avoid what you did, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So I'm just watching all you people out there as you're going through life and you're experimenting. I noticed the other day I saw some figures on this flu vaccine while we're talking about vaccines here. And if you've had, I don't know if it's 3 or 4 or 5 flu shots in the last 10 years, your chances of getting Alzheimer's are 10 times greater with 5 flu shots out of 10 flu seasons than they are if you had zero. So over the past 10 years, I have had exactly 0 flu shots, none, 0, zilch. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to get Alzheimer's, but all the professionals, all the guys with MDs after their names, they say their reports, their experience, their experimentation has shown that I've got a 10 times less chance of getting Alzheimer's than the guy that's had 5 or 10 shots. And that's what I want to buy into. I want to buy into the program where I will not get Alzheimer's disease. Now somebody's going to be quick to point out, yeah, but you may die from the flu. Well, that's certainly a possibility. I don't deny it. I don't know, it's 35,000 people a year that die from the flu, and then we have millions of people that are vaccinated every year, and then they have a 10 times greater chance of getting Alzheimer's disease. Hell, I think I'd rather die from the flu than Alzheimer's disease. I think I'd rather take my chances with the flu bug than I would with Alzheimer's. Now, that's a choice that everybody has to make, and that's my choice. So if I croak this winter, you know, and you find out I died from the flu, then you can say, well, that guy Gordon made the wrong choice, and boy, I'm glad I got my flu shot. Well, anyway, over here in Romans chapter 1 and in verse 18, there's a little story here. Let me read you the story, talking about educated people and uneducated people. The pagan philosophers is what this is about. And in verse 18, he says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold back the truth in unrighteousness. Those who hold back the truth in unrighteousness. I mentioned this to you yesterday, that there are 9 cures to cancer. 9! 7 of the 9 were discovered by medical doctors. Such as the Essiac story that I delivered here to you. Remember? If you want to listen, go back in the archives and look up Essiac. You know, that's quite a little story. This lady is a nurse. She's a college graduate, and she took this to the medical profession in Canada. And she says, "Look, this stuff came from an Indian over here. He probably never went to drug school, never went to medical school, didn't know diddly squat. But these Indians up here, some Indian tribe, I forgot their name now, had for hundreds of years had this Essiac formula, this herbal tea." That they took when they got cancer, and then the cancer would go away. And after all, that's what they wanted to buy into. They didn't have bypass surgery, and they didn't have oncologists, and they didn't have all of the modern medical marvels, you know, that people have today. And so they drank this tea, and the cancer went away, and that's what they wanted. Well, anyway, that's just one of the 9 cures. And all of the people involved in Essiac were medical professionals, every single one of them. There wasn't a single layperson involved in the whole Essiac story. Not a one. None. Zero. Zilch. No lay people involved in it. But Essiac was banned by the Parliament in Canada. It was banned by their medical association. It is banned by the FDA and the medical association in the United States today. If you want it, it's available. I mean, you can get it. And you got to, it's like getting heroin and cocaine. I mean, you know, you got to get it from a private druggist down on the street corner someplace and risk going to prison if you get caught with it. But then, you know, that's the price of bad medicine, I guess. Now, good medicine in America, good medicine, that's where you go to your oncologist and he gives you cut, burn, and poison. And 37% of the time you survive and 63% of the time you die. Cost you $100,000 to die in this country from cancer. I don't like the cancer regime and the cancer program that's going on here in the United States, and so I want to opt out of it. But I just wanted to point out that all of the people that are involved in the FDA and all the people that are involved with the American Medical Association, all the people that are involved in cancer and cancer treatment in this country are all professionals. They all go to college and they all got degrees. They're all scientists. They're all men of great learning. And these are men who learn from experimentation and they reject revelation. They don't want to learn from revelation. They want to learn from experimentation. I don't want to get in their way. I don't want to get in their way. Going on over here, verse 19, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it to them. You know, these people know the truth about cancer. God has shown it to them. They've got 9 cures, and they've rejected all of them. Now, why would they do that? Could it be for money? Could it be because cancer is worth $500 billion a year in treatment? But if we had these cures out here, it would be worth nothing or near nothing. I mean, you can't get $100,000 out of somebody that's on SEAC because the whole SEAC program, as I recall, the whole SEAC program is under $200. Now, my wife had cancer, and she used SEAC, and she cured the cancer with SEAC, and I don't think she spent $200 on it. It's an herbal tea. Now, one time she had cancer back in 78, and they said, well, for $100,000, you know, we can give you another 18 months of life. And she said, excuse me, let's see if I understand this. For $100,000, you're going to cut, burn, and poison. My hair's going to fall out, and I'm going to feel real bad, and I'm going to die in 18 months. Yep, and that's the way that goes. She said, hell, if I'm going to die in 18 months, I might as well just save the $100,000, die in 6 months, and leave the $100,000 to my family. They'll probably need it. She got off on some program over here, some alternative medical program over here, and here's nearly 30 years later, and she's still kicking. Still kicking. Verse 20, for the invisible things of God from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they're without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, and neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. They changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creation more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. And for this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. We call those lesbians today, sodomites and lesbians. And likewise also the men leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meat. These are the philosophers. These are the professionals, kids. And now they come around to us and they tell us that this is an alternative lifestyle. This is good for you. And they teach that in your public schools. You know, these are your professional teachers in the public schools telling you the sex education for your 14-year-old daughter and an alternative lifestyle. We're going to teach her how to be sexually active at age 14 or 15. This is good for her. And this revelation crap about thou shalt not commit adultery and flee fornication, you know, is just nonsense, and you ought not to listen to that. But we're the philosophers, and we're the educated, and we've got letters after our names. And what does this Jesus know about the Ten Commandments? Criminy, he doesn't even have letters after his name, remember? Showed you that yesterday. Hey, kids, you know, you don't have to be real smart to figure out that sodomy isn't good for you. If you just take a look at the statistics that come out of the CDC, they point out that sodomites die at age 39 on average. With AIDS. And if they don't die from AIDS at age 39 on average, then they die on average without AIDS at age 45 from hepatitis or some other disease. Now, the average lifespan, kids, is 75 and a half years. 75.5 years. That's the average here in the United States. And the average for a sodomite is 45. Are you getting the drift here? Comes right out of the CDC. The CDC is staffed by educated people. They all have letters after their names, very smart guys, and they can count real good. And they counted it up. And they figured out that the sodomites are dying at age 45. Here's God comes along and says, hey, listen, these guys are over here teaching you from their scientific experimentation something that ain't too good. They're experimenting with sodomy, and it ain't working out to be very good. Now, God comes along with revelation. He says, now, listen, let me tell you, so that there's no misunderstanding. You want to avoid fornication. Thou shalt not commit adultery, and you do not want to be a sodomite. And I'm telling you right now, don't do that. That's called revelation. My daddy used to give me these revelations. And his revelations were usually, not always, but usually enforced with corporal punishment. I remember one time my dad asked me if he'd raised a fool. He told me to come here and when I came over there, I got a little lippy with him, and so he whipped me bad. And then he asked me if I learned anything from that, and I said no. I was a very precocious child. I only told my daddy no, I didn't learn anything one time that I can recall. And when he got through with me the second time, he said, "Now did you learn anything?" And I said, yes, sir, I learned. I figured that right out, boss. Yes, sir, massa, I figured that right out. He went on to say a little bit more about this. He said, "Likewise, also the men leaving the natural use of the woman," you know, the sodomites. Verse 28, he said, "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind," he calls them reprobates, "to do those things which are not convenient." And he said, "They're filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness. They're full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them." I like this one over here that says inventors of evil things. It reminds me of the people that invented the atomic bomb in the Manhattan Project. They got the genie out of the jar, and now we're just real excited about it. You know, the North Koreans are practicing now with nuclear weapons, and the Iranians want to do it too. Boy, that gets us excited, doesn't it? We call it the axis of evil. These are people that invent evil things. Well, excuse me, boys and girls, but who were the first people that invented this evil thing called nuclear weapons? Huh? Wasn't it the Americans? Just thought I'd share that with you. You know, so, you know, when next time you get mad at a North Korean over here and you want to go eat his lunch, you want to remember, well, who was at the start of the process? And all of the people that thought of this process, these are the smart people. These are the physicists. You know, these are the nuclear scientists. These are the educated people. These are the experimenters. These are the guys that deny that revelation has any role in life, and that what we want to do is we want to reject revelation. Don't listen to this God guy over here. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But you listen to us. Listen to us while we put thimerosal into your vaccines and introduce into your population autism and sudden infant death syndrome, and then deny that it's the thimerosal or the vaccinations and the vaccines that's causing it. And then when you take this thimerosal out in California and the autism rate drops in half, we will continue to deny that the thimerosal has anything to do with autism. And when the Japanese postpone vaccination from age 2 months to 2 years and the incidence of sudden infant death syndrome declines by 50%, we will deny that it has anything to do with the vaccines. And then we will vilify George Gordon when he sends a note up to the school nurse and says, "Don't vaccinate my kid," or litigation will surely follow. Hey, I'm not here to tell you how to live your life, kids. I'm just here as a reporter telling you that here's where the rubber meets the road. And while we're at that, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Well, I just said that. Oh, here's the next line. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. That can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. If you couldn't keep up with that, let me repeat it. The number again is 417-273-4967. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the professionals and the professions, of which everybody wants to be a professional. And we're all taught and trained that we want to go to college. Oh my God, if you don't go to college, you're going to starve to death in the process. And I pointed out to you last time, my God, if everybody went to college, who in the hell is going to fix the cars? Who's going to put the roofs on and build the houses and fix the leaks in the plumbing? And come on, kids, you got to have some people out here like me who are the workers. I mean, you know, it's all right to have a few queens and a few drones, you know, but, you know, you can't have everybody a drone. Can't have everybody a queen. Some of us have to be workers. Fortunately for all of you, you got one worker here. Okay, now, this thing of being a professional versus an amateur, I looked it up in the dictionary. Webster says that a professional is somebody that goes after it hot and heavy, and he says he knows something, and he does this as his profession or avocation. He may be a professional in archaeology, paleontology, geology, economist, or a mathematician, an astronomer. He could be a professor or a teacher or an instructor or a physicist or a nuclear physicist or a laser physicist or a chemist or a druggist or a drug dealer or a drug user or practices witchcraft. Or maybe he's involved in biology or ichthyology or zoology or fish or bugology or something else like that. As opposed to an amateur, you know, you can have an amateur astronomer. Or you can have an astronomer. Now, the difference is that the astronomer, he makes his living at, teaches, or gets right after astronomy, whereas the amateur astronomer, he looks at the stars through his telescope at night, but he doesn't publish anything. He doesn't make his living doing this. The rest of the time, he's out doing something constructive. Now, when you take a look at these professions and professionals over here, such as the preacher, the theology, priest, preacher, prophet, did you know the Bible has a lot to say about teachers of the Bible and theology? These guys are professionals. See, I'm just an amateur, See, I'm a plumber by trade, a general contractor. Sometimes people call me a preacher. You know, I'm a pretty nice guy. Otherwise, I'd take offense at that. Well, if there's one thing I ain't no preacher. I avoid preaching and preachers, you know, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. That's a criminal occupation. Did you know that? Did you know that being a preacher is a crime? Crime, criminal. Now, we have about 330,000 of these preachers in the United States of America, paid professional criminals called ministers, theologians, priests. What else do they call them? I got some names, but I can't tell you on the air because they get excited over at the FCC if I told you what I really thought about these preachers. But don't call me one of them because I'm not one of those guys. I'm just George the Plumber. But once in a while, I open the Bible, you know, for no other reason, just to see, well, how are these guys lying to me this week? Well, over in the book of Luke, chapter 11, there's a little something over here that Jesus had to say about preachers. Preachers. Listen to this. In Luke 11, verse 37, he said, "And as he spake, a certain Pharisee besought him to dine with him, and he went in and he sat down to meat. And when the Pharisee," today we'd call him the Catholic priest, or we would call him the Jim Baker, the Jerry Falwell, or the Oral Roberts, you know, he was a Pharisee, he was a leader, he was a priest, a preacher, one of these holy Joseph, sky pilot. He was one of these guys that knows about theology and God, you know. "And when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner." Jesus was a dirty pig who did not wash before dinner. And this Pharisee saw that, and he just really bummed out. Verse 39, "And the Lord," this is Jesus, "said unto him, Now do you Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the planter?" The platter, P-L-A-T-T-R, the platter. "But your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness." What? I mean, what would you think of some guy, he's sitting down here with Jerry Falwell at dinner. Jerry Falwell says, "Well, how come you didn't say grace before eating? How come you didn't wash your hands?" And he says to Jerry Falwell, he says, "Hey, your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness." And then he says, "You fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which is within also? But rather give alms of such things as you have, and behold, all things are clean unto you. But woe unto you Pharisees, because you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and you pass over judgment and the love of God. These ought you to have done, and not to have left the other undone. Woe unto you Pharisees, for you love the uppermost seats in the synagogues and the greetings in the markets. Woe unto you scribes, you Pharisees, you preachers, you hypocrites, for you are as graves which appear not, and the men that walk over them are not aware of them." Yeah, that's what Jesus had to say about preachers and priests and religious guys. Hey, don't get mad at me. I didn't say that. I just wanted to point out to you, though, that all of these preachers and priests and all these guys, aren't these the intelligentsia of our society? Aren't these people all the guys that went to college and got out of there with a degree after their name? You know, we're Dr. So-and-so and we're Dr. Such-and-such, or you know, we're at least Father, you know, this or that or something else. Now listen, the Messiah had a couple other nasty things to say about preachers over here, too. While we're talking about nasty things about preachers, over here in Matthew 7, verse 21, he didn't let any slack out of this line either, when he said, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Now many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and have we not in your name cast out devils, and in your name done many wonderful works?" Verse 23, he said, "Then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity." Iniquity, lawlessness. Now, this first citation I gave you over here, he said, "You fools, didn't he that made that which is without also make that which is within also? But rather give alms of such things as you have, and behold, all things are clean unto you." He talked about the love of God here in Luke 11, verses 37 through 44. Do you know what love of God is? He told them here that you ought to have practiced the love of God. Now, you know these preachers, they're always talking about love. You ever notice that? It's love this and love that. And, oh, Jesus loves you. And you just get real kind of syrupy and sanctimonious and excited and one thing and another. Well, in 1 John 5, verse 3, I believe it is, gives you the definition of what love is. I know it's kind of crazy, but let me flip over here. 1 John 5, verse 3, I believe it is. It says, verse 2, he says, by this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. When you love God, you keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. Boys and girls, these preachers out here, they hate the law of God. I have never heard a preacher that had a single good word about the Ten Commandments or the laws of God. And if you know of one, send me a letter, would you? Tell me of one. God, what a breath of fresh air that would be if you said, hey, I know a preacher over here, and he says that the Ten Commandments are okay by him. That'd be real big of him, you know, if he said, gee, I think the Ten Commandments are probably okay. Now, we Americans here in this country, we used to practice the Ten Commandments. Now, I know it's a wild historical fact, kids. We used to actually practice the Ten Commandments and the laws of God, and we had a little bit of reverence here for our Creator. We don't anymore because we've gone off into this thing called the scientific method, being led by the medical doctors. Well, boys and girls, now that we're talking about being led by the medical doctors, can you point to just one success by the medical doctors? Could you? You know, just they cured heart disease, they cured cancer, muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease. Come on. You have 450 of these diseases with their attendant symptoms, you know, like Lou Gehrig's disease, and now you got Alzheimer's disease and so on. And the doctors now have the cure for it, don't they? Hell, they can't even cure the common cold, for crying out loud. And they're giving you flu shots that give you Alzheimer's disease. Then they shoot your kids up and give them autism and sudden infant death syndrome. And these are people that we're supposed to be following? My God, have we taken leave of our senses? There isn't anybody out there that I've seen so far that I want to follow. I'm not out here beating the gong for Jesus either. You know, I'm just telling you, my common sense, though, tells me the medical profession hasn't gotten to the point yet where they can tell me what causes cancer. They can't cure cancer. Excuse me. Hang on a second. You take your car into a shop, and it isn't running very good, see? And you come up to this mechanic, and you say, hey, you listening to this? And he says, yeah, I hear it. And you ask the mechanic, you say, hey, do you know what's wrong with my car? And he says, no, I don't know what's wrong with it. And then you ask him, well, can you fix it? And he says, no, I don't know what's wrong with it, and I don't think I can fix it. But for $25 an hour, I'll sit here and work on this thing until you go broke. Would you leave your car there to be fixed with a screwball like that? But you know, you go into the doctor's office, and you say, hey, doc, I ain't feeling too good. He says, well, let's give you some tests. He comes back, he says, oh, my God, you've got cancer. You say to him, doc, do you know what causes cancer? He says, no, I don't know. Doc, can you cure my cancer? He says, no, we don't have any cure. But for $100,000, we can treat it until your insurance runs out or you go broke. And people line up. They can't get enough of it. I don't know, kids. Hey, you can take my place in that line. You want to get some cut-burning poison from your local cancer doctor over here? Hey, take my place. Don't let me get in the way. And I want to point out that all these people are professionals, and I'm sure they all mean well. I'm not invoking, you know, some bad intent or bad motive over here and saying, hey, this doctor over here, he's trying to kill you. Hell, he might actually believe the BS that he's selling. I don't know. But I know this, in 1900, the average guy was going to get cancer, one out of 33 people. The average guy, one out of 33 was your chances of getting cancer. Today, in 2006, it's one out of two. And who's been leading the charge on cancer for the last 106 years? Hasn't it been the allopathic medical doctors, the guys that go to college and come out with their MD degrees? Aren't these the guys that tell us, hey, follow us? You know, you send your dimes and dollars and getting this outfit and march. You know, here in Springfield, Missouri, they have these marches. You know, when people get out here, they get 5,000-10,000 people, and they march on polio, or not polio, but march on cancer. Or they march on muscular dystrophy, or they march on this or that or something else. Like, we're going to raise money so that we can pay this money over to these paid professionals over here that have degrees after their names, letters after their names, so that they can find a cure for this or that disease. There's this guy that's doing this on Labor Day, Jerry Lewis, the Jerry Lewis Telethon. They raise millions and millions of dollars every year for research on, is it muscular dystrophy? Something like that. Well, God bless Jerry Lewis. No, I'm just all in favor of wiping out muscular dystrophy. But, hey, listen, these guys haven't figured out what causes muscular dystrophy. Did you know that the Bible tells you what causes muscular dystrophy? I just thought I'd share that with you. There's a source of information here called Revelation. And there's a guy over here that says, hey, I know what causes muscular dystrophy. And I know how to cure it. I know how to avoid it. Did you know that? Yeah, I just thought I'd share that with you. There is a guy that's commonly called God. I'm not really sure that that's his name. It's a title that, you know, we give him, and it's a pagan name that goes back into ancient times. You know, there's Allah, and there's God, and Jesus, and Buddha, and, you know, you got all these deities out here. There's the pagan deities, you know, that we call them pagan. I'm not sure that the people that were, you know, Jupiter and Moonday and Tuesday, you know, two, and then there's Thor's day, and Saturn. I mean, you know, you got all these pagan gods, all these deities, and people pray to their deities. I'm not really sure that praying to all these deities has solved anybody's problems yet. But they thought that they did, and people are that way today. There's religious people out here to this day, and they get really excited, you know, and they pray to Jesus, and then they die. I've been watching people for a long time. I told you about an old buddy of mine one time. He got cancer, you know, and we all felt real bad about old Mr. Wegner. You know, he got cancer, and we prayed for Mr. Wegner, and Mr. Wegner, I'm sure, was praying for Mr. Wegner. And all this prayer and all this hoopla went on here, and then pretty soon one day Mr. Wegner died. And so I just took notes, and I said, well, you know, you can sit here and pray until the cows come home, but then the final analysis, you die from cancer. And I said to myself, well, I'd like to find out what caused that cancer, and I'd like to know why Mr. Wegner died, and I'd like to know what he could have done to have alleviated those symptoms over there, but obviously what he was doing and what we thought we were doing for him didn't work, didn't solve the problem. Now, the acid test is, does it work? I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road, kids. It, does it work or doesn't it? I mean, you get cancer, and you go to the doctor, and then you die, didn't work. And we find that 63% of the time it doesn't work, and 37% of the time they claim it works, but I'm not sure that it wouldn't work better if you left them alone. We find that when the doctors go on strike, the death rate goes down. That's been done two or three times. In countries, you know, where they have socialized medicine and the doctors go on strike, the death rate drops by about 50%. 35% in Israel last time they had a doctor strike. Now, what does that tell you? The doctors go on strike, the paid professionals, the MDs, and the death rate drops in half. Hey. That doesn't sound very good when we're talking about professionals and learning through the scientific method. Now, we accept the scientific method. We all know that science is God. Science will answer our questions. But they haven't answered the question on cancer yet, have they? I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We are open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, until then. Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.